Good afternoon. I've called the House Education Finance Committee to order. And Representative Christensen, we are at last getting to your bill, and I apologize and appreciate your patience. And we've had some really good, thorough committee discussions the last couple of meetings, but unfortunately it meant that your bill keeps getting moved to the next day's agenda. So today is the day. We don't have a quorum yet, but if you want to go ahead and tell us about House File 1636, I think that would get us off to a good start, and I would expect members will be here shortly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and third time's the charm. House File 1636 extends the current state law through fiscal year 2017, allows school districts to have more flexibility in how they're spending their funds and really to do what's best for their local community, the local school district, and make the best decisions for them, their students, the parents, and the families in their area. I'd like to invite the MSBA up to talk a little bit more about the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, it's a good thing I didn't say Ms. Kelleher.
I'm switching it up on you today. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I will fill in here. We want to thank Representative Christensen for bringing this bill forward. School board members continually ask for flexibility in funds and spending money so that they can diagnose and needs and then put the funding where it is needed. And as Representative Christensen said, this is already in statute, and I don't believe that there are any issues with that. And there has been, I think it has been real positive for school board members. They are serving the same students with both these funds, and so we would like to suggest that we would be able to continue that local flexibility. So with that, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. We appreciate it. Do you have any other testifiers, Representative Christensen?
Madam Chair, no.
All right. I was just going to say, is anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? It looks like Ms. Dolzlin's coming down.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dolzlin. I represent the Minnesota Community Ed Association. And just wanted to be clear, we are not opposed to the bill, and I've talked about this issue with Representative Christensen. It's come to our attention that when this recently, that there's an understanding that while you can't transfer funds out of the community service fund to other funds, that you have some flexibility within the community service fund to transfer funds. So, for instance, you could transfer ECFE revenue for school readiness purposes and vice versa. So I just talked with Representative Christensen a day or two ago. We'd like to just try to put a few more parameters around in which a district could transfer ECFE funds. We just want to make sure that there's not an interest in completely transferring all of the ECFE program revenue into school readiness. And so we just would like to work with Representative Christensen on putting some parameters around that.
Thank you, Ms. Dolzlin. Appreciate that. All right, and we do have a quorum. So with that, Representative Christensen, you want to move your bill formally. So your motion would be that House File 1636 is moved to the General Register.
Madam Chair, I move House File 1636 to the General Register.
All right, but the Chair's intention of laying it over today. And then also Representative Peterson, if you would like to make a motion to approve our minutes from yesterday.
Madam Chair, yes, please. Let's approve the minutes from
March 18th.
March 15th.
18th.
18th. Excuse
me. All right. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Representative Anderson, I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I was been anxiously waiting to hear this bill from Representative Christensen, so it's good to hear it today, and thanks. Good job.
We all have. It just built the suspension and the anticipation, don't you think? I would agree. So. Good. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 1636? All right. Any questions from committee members? You're on a roll, Representative Christensen. Final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Thanks for listening to the bill. I think this will be a good thing to provide more flexibility for our local school districts.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, Representative Christensen renews his motion to House File 1636 be moved to the General Register. The Chair's intention today is to lay it over. Thank you very much. All right. Representative Bly, let's go ahead and go with you. Representative Crescia is not with us yet.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome. And Representative, I will get your bill before us. So I would move that House File 1390 be referred to Ways and Means, but the intention of the Chair today is to lay it over. And I believe you have an author's amendment. So do you want to talk about the bill first or just get your amendment on to have it in the shape you would like it?
Let's deal with the amendment first. And I'd like to invite Gene Piccolo to come up and to speak to the amendment and why it's important.
Good. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. The amendment that Representative Bly, we thank him for his efforts on this, would be to allow a charter school that has 70% of their students that are graduation incentive students, the really at-risk students, to be qualified for extended time revenue. These are the students that are most at need for additional services and programming, and that this confines it to those schools that have a significant population of those students that qualify.
All right, very good. So with that, members, you should have in your packet the A15 amendment as just described by Mr. Piccolo. And with that, we would add the amendment to House File 1390. Any discussion or questions from members on the amendment? With that, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So the amendment's been adopted. All right, Representative Bly, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your bill?
Okay. Extended time refers to either after school or summertime programming that ALCs and now, if this should pass, charter schools would be able to use to help students graduate and make up credits they were behind on. In my experience as a lead teacher at a alternative school and ALC, the best way to assure that a student was going to graduate was to help them get there either through after school time work that they would do or in the summer summertime that so they could finish as close to on time as they possibly could. And over the years, things have changed. And at this point, what I'd like to do is have Steve Allen, who represents the Minnesota Association of Entrepreneurial Programs, talk a little bit about that.
Welcome. And if you please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Steve Allen. I'm the Executive Coordinator of Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. Thank you, Representative Bly. Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs is an organization that is approximately 32 years old and represents alternative and charter schools that serve at-risk kids around the state. Thanks to legislators like yourself, Minnesota is thought of as a very progressive state in alternative education and it attempts to meet the needs of all students. In fact, this Tuesday I was at a recovery school accreditation process and an educator from Nashville, Tennessee, reiterated to me, he says, I wish we had programs like this in Tennessee. That was really affirming to what we have going on in Minnesota, thanks to a lot of your efforts. In the 1970s, the flexible learning year was established, an attempt to, and this was, I was still teaching back then, and the attempt was to utilize buildings and facilities during the entire year and provide forms of optional scheduling for pupils and personnel. This bill was later on refined by former Senator Jerry Hughes into the Learner Year legislation in the late 1980s and 1990s. I still remember that Senator Hughes really liked to talk, and that was a key thing, and I had a meeting with him, and he did a lot of the talking. I was working with an alternative program back then prior to this legislation. We used to utilize summer school aid to run our summer school programs. It became real obvious to me that that you wanted to catch students when they were really motivated and not let them give up hope. That's a key factor. Once students give up hope, then we all lose. And it's much harder to bring them back into the system. However, we often were able to recover some students who left the system. It's critical during these time periods that we are able to move as quickly as possible with these students. There's a saying in alternative education that we need to be there when the students need us, or as I say, when their light goes on. The 2010 Legislative Auditor's Report affirmed that extended time programming is beneficial for at-risk kids. This report refers to both credit-bearing secondary programs and targeted service programs for younger students. In the current verbiage, the extended time programming increases graduation rates and assists in closing the learning gap. We've come a long way in alternative education since the inception of the Learner Year legislation. The next step is to recognize the work that many charter schools are doing serving at-risk students. I believe that it's time to allow charter schools who are serving a significant amount of at-risk students to also access extended time resources. The revenue for extended time programming has varied over the past 25 years. The maximum cap was originally set at 1.5 ADM per student. The cap is currently at 1.2 ADM per student. This allows students to complete about approximately 2.5 credits each year. Some schools who currently still serve kids even after they complete the 2.5 credits and get no additional funds for those students. With limited resources and increasing graduation requirements, it becomes more difficult for at-risk students to graduate on time. A former senator, James Peeler, used to say, "We can either pay it now or pay it later." And we prefer to pay it now and to catch the kids and keep them in the system so that they can graduate on time before students give up hope. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. We appreciate it. Do you have additional testifiers?
Yes, they do. And you know, I just wanted to kind of speak to what Mr. Allen was saying, in that we have students that come to these programs quite far behind in school, and if they're willing to make up that credit either in the summer or after school, it's an ideal time to do that. And I know for myself, when we lost the when the funding went down to 1.2 from 1.5, we would still continue to work with those students, even though we weren't necessarily receiving the revenue, but it just made it a lot harder to be successful. So I have Bill Zimnowitz and a student who would like to. Bill is a former ALC director and now head of charter school, and he has a student with him who would like to talk a little bit about this.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Bill Zimnowitz. I'm director of Jennings Community Learning Center. I've been working in alternative education since the early 1980s, and I've been in Native American Alternative School, and I was in South St. Paul School District for 14 years. And since 2004, I've kind of want to do some of the innovative learning, different pedagogies, and I founded a charter school in West St. Paul, but in the last 9 years, I've been at Jennings. And a few years back, we did have the learning year. It was extended to charter schools, and even though the school that I'm at started with kind of a different innovative model and things like that, we are an urban school, and we get a very high-risk population. A couple years ago, I did a count. We served 125 kids, and 49 of them were homeless. It's very hard. You know, we want to capture these kids. And the summer programming, because it's volunteer on the students' part, it's a terrific opportunity, and we do a lot of great learning things, great learning activities for them. And I'm just asking that in the amendment to this bill that we are allowed to do that once again, because the alternative would be to have the students go to, say, the ALC at St. Paul, or at we've got students from all over the Twin Cities, but quite frankly, they don't want to go. There's a reason they're at Jennings, and it's by their choice. It's a smaller group. We will not have more than 96 students in our school. It's been a great life working with students. We've got two. I was just telling Dr. Wayne Jennings, who's sitting there, two of our students from Jennings are both graduating from Hamlin this year in global studies. One is speaks fluent Nepalese. The other speaks fluent Japanese. And I spoke to this committee a few years back about one of them. When she came to our program, she was going to be a baker, and there's nothing wrong with that. I support anybody's vocation. But she saw other talents in her, and she the Rotary Club, you know, we did some things with them and some other organizations. And she ended up doing, she's been to Japan three times, and she'll get her bachelor's degree from Hamlin, and she's, last I heard, she's applying at Georgetown. She wants to work for the State Department in East Asian Studies. So I didn't bring a student. I did bring a student at that hearing a couple of years ago when Representative Bai asked that if I wanted to come. I always say sure, but I always ask the students because this is a great civics opportunity. And Ray Holmes, sitting to my right, has just he's been at our program for just a couple of months, but I recognize in him and our staff recognize a certain leadership, a certain social justice kind of edge to him. He's a fine young man and. Ray, this is your opportunity to shine.
No pressure, Mr. Holmes.
But there's no pressure.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ray Holmes, and I recently moved from Chicago, Illinois, a year and a half ago. Sorry about that. My name is Ray Holmes, and I recently moved from Chicago, Illinois, a year and a half ago. And I came to Roosevelt High School over south, and it really wasn't a good fit for me because they the way things are, it's designed for you to do what they want you to do and not really work on skills to build for like life skills and things like that. You know, what Jennings does is it really is teachers are more one-on-one, and they help you figure out what you're good at and build help you building skills and prepare you for more life skills rather than things that you will never really work on again. And so I would like to the summer program to be held at Jennings because really as when I'm speaking, I'm representing other students as well. We really, the reason we came to Jennings is for a reason, and going back into the system that we failed in previously to learn, it's not really a good idea when we're already at a location where we can learn and continue learning at the environment that we're comfortable in. And really, I started PSEO next year, and I couldn't do that at my previous school, but now I get to start college classes next year as a junior. I'll be a junior next year. And, yeah, it gives me a head start in life because I really don't have a head start right now, so I just make it my own, and Jennings is helping me with that. And I would like to continue working throughout the summer to help me get ahead in life quicker. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. We appreciate you being here. Anything else to add to that, Mr. Zimwitz?
I want to thank the committee, Madam Chair, and the committee members to have us here to testify. And it's just the great thing about summer, it's volunteer on the students' part, and when they want to come there, and that summer, that was kind of a disappointment. I know it was kind of whatever shuffled out in the legislature at the time. But it's we're looking forward to if we can get it back someday. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So just to be clear, Madam Chair, so there are two provisions in the bill, really. One is to move back to where the original kind of funding structure was, but also to put back into the opportunity for charter schools to take advantage of this as they once were.
Thank you. Let's see, do you have one more testifier?
I think Lee Dahl was also going to testify.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, everyone, for the opportunity today.
I'm here on behalf of the three intermediate districts in the state and the Area Learning Center specific to those districts as we work with our partners, the charter schools, in looking at the extended year revenue. As I said, I'm Lee Dahl. I've worked for 28 years, a long time, with the alternative kids and seen so much potential in stories and kids who maybe get behind, but with a little extra support and shoring up, we can get them through high school and into their lives. I specifically work for 287, which serves the western part of Hennepin County districts. It's made up of 12 school districts, districts like Edina, Eden Prairie, Osseo, Robbinsdale, Hopkins. And our request today, we ask of you, is to restore the funding for the ADM, the extended time funding, to 1-4. Was 1-5 originally and has been 1-2 for a number of years now, but to help our students who are behind catch up and get their graduation or get their diploma. I tried to boil it down to three reasons as I was writing this last night, and I think I've cut it pretty much down. But first of all, at-risk students are behind in their graduation credits. That's not a surprise, and sometimes significantly so. Restoring this funding allows those students to utilize multiple pathways to earn these credits and not hold them back because of limited facilities or teacher access. When the students are ready, we want to be ready. We should be ready. It's our responsibility to give them the tools they need to complete their education and graduate. And frankly, funding them now to do this in the long run is probably more cost-effective than not. My second reason is that at-risk students, while they mostly attend day programs, they also have a lot of other competing things in their lives, often working or taking care of their families, within their children, in their families. And they also lose a lot of hours in transportation each day, so for some of them. So restoring the funding would allow some improved schedule opportunities for after school, weekends, before and after school, actually, and even summer, and even online. At-risk students are a really good fit for blended learning opportunities. My final point is that at-risk students also face unique challenges disproportionate to the regular population, such as pregnant and parenting teens, court-involved students who have drug and chemical issues or families that have them. Sometimes they're homeless. So restoring the funding, again, allows us to address some of these unique challenges through special classes, curricula, and services to keep the students on track for graduation. I just saw a bulletin, I think it was yesterday's, that Governor Dayton had pledged 80% of the state surplus to go back to education and families, and this restoration seems completely in alignment with that pledge. I guess, again, I'd just like to urge or say my request again. Please support this request to reinstate the 1.4, and I appreciate your concern for our at-risk kids and their futures.
Thank you, Ms. Dahl. We appreciate your testimony. Did you have any other additional testifiers today, Representative Bly?
Do you want to say anything? No, I don't think we do. And I stand for questions if there are any questions.
All right. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not a question for Representative Bly unless he wants to jump in, but for staff, Mr. Strom or Ms. Johnson. So I'm a big fan of extended time creating opportunity, but before we talk about extended time, what are the parameters we require in either the day or the year before we talk about you having extended beyond that day or year?
Good question, and I'm going to add on to that, if I might, Representative Dabney. I was looking at the overview, and could you also go through the history of the change in the formula calculation and on this program, too?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, yes, I'd be glad to. The language in the bill on page 2 for the existing statute starting at 2.11 lists the hours of instruction that need to be met before the extended time funding kicks in. So you can see those different hours depending on grade level there. But let me back up to the Chair's question first. Prior to the early 2000s, Students could count for an unlimited amount of time depending on how many hours of service they were getting. And some students, including those that were in some credit recovery programs and some independent study programs, were making up a lot of time, and as a result were counting at ADMs in the near two for a very selected few number of students, but the range was all over the board. And I should perhaps back up just a little further as well and say that in 1987, the legislature changed the funding system and eliminated summer school funding. And so one thing that happened was the categorical revenue for summer school funding went away in 1987. And then what happened in the decade following that was a number of districts realized that they could run their regular style summer school programming and other kinds of extended day, extended time programs through the learning year process. And so a learning year program is generally one of three types. It can be an ALC program, which is an area learning center style program. It can be an area learning program or a targeted needs style program. And so through a variety of those programs, students who were receiving extra time were being counted as more than one student in average daily membership, essentially more than a full-time pupil. And as I mentioned, toward the late 90s and early 2000s, a number of students were receiving more than even 1.5 on the ADM, and there was a concern expressed by some legislators that this part of the budget was growing too much and that some of these programs perhaps weren't providing the service in the way that they should. So the end result of some compromise on the legislature's part was first to lower that funding to a cap of 1.5. So that a student could count for an additional 50%. And then I don't remember if it was 1 or 2 years later, the legislature came back and reduced that to the 0.2. So the additional hours can only be at 20%. So the history of how we got there and the why is never clear to me, Madam Chair, on some of these things. But the history of how we got there was the elimination of summer school funding, the increase in the learning year programs, including some kids whose ADMs were approaching two, and a decision by the legislature to scroll those back. So that's how we got to where we are now with a cap on that additional time that a student can be served of 0.2, and that's outside of the regular ADM count now. That only counts for purposes of extended time for the one formula allowance there, so it doesn't work through any of the other school formulas. Prior to the change in the late 1990s, that worked through all the other formulas that were pupil-weighted as well.
So. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Mr. Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom, for that. This is just, I need to get my head around a little bit more of this. Minneapolis schools will be, for I think the second year in a row, maybe third, doing a spring break academy where, instead of going to Florida, some kids who need the extra time will be in school, and they're expecting about 3,000 kids, so it's a fair number of folks who are going to be in school that week. It's during a break, but it's within the school year calendar. Will those kids draw down extended time? Because I presume it's, you know, within the school day clock that we would normally consider and within the school year, but at a time when they would otherwise not be present and the staff would not be present as well. Does that sort of a program qualify for extended year? Because they are receiving extended attention.
Madam Chair, Representative Daphne, in general, that would be the kind of program that qualifies. I'm not sure exactly how Minneapolis has that structured, mm-hmm. but the time can be weekend time, it can be a longer school day, it could be through the breaks, and it could be a summer program. Now, the things you'll run into is the total of that student can only go to another 0.2. So if they were doing Saturday school and a spring break school and that kind of thing, as that ADM, as those hours accumulate, that can't exceed 0.2, including the time spent in summer school. So I presume that in Minneapolis this is part of their area learning center plan and that's how they're doing it, and that these hours would be counting. But in general, the big thing to keep in mind is there's that overall limit. The other thing that's important to point out is that a school district files its regular calendar of however many days and hours that is, and it's the hours on top of that that count for extended time, with, of course, having to meet at least the minimum.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Bly for bringing this forward. The woman who testified before did a wonderful job. She had three reasons why we should support this. I'm just going to give you one: equity. These are kids that desperately need this extended time.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? All right. Anyone else who wishes to testify? Oh, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question on how many students, and maybe it was mentioned and I missed it, how many students are currently participating in extended programming in Minnesota? And would this extend to additional students or just additional time for the students already participating?
Good question. Ms. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Wills, I believe we were just speaking here that the total ADM count is about 12,000, but that the 0.2 is an increment for each one, so that goes to about 60,000 as a quick estimate. I can get an actual number, too, but I think that's 60,000 is about the right number.
About 60,000. And then Representative Wills, her follow-on question, so if in moving in from 1.2 to 1.4, would that serve more students or more hours for the same students, or I'm guessing maybe a combination thereof? But.
Madam Chair, Representative Wells, yes, that's true. It would be both for extending the time. Maybe they would do more extended day programs or have more students start on in a summer program that weren't on one in the past. So, but it's hard to say, you know, what combination that would be.
All right. Any other questions? Right. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 1390? All right. Representative Bly, get the last word.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for allowing me to present this bill to you. And I can speak from my own experience as a teacher in these kinds of schools how important it is to catch students who have fallen further behind and give them some hope to achieve and finish close to on time, because it's a huge factor in getting them to stay and commit to finishing. So thank you.
Thank you. And I must say I agree. When we had our hearing to ask about strategies for addressing the achievement gap, that was a very common thread through a lot of programs we heard from that were doing just that. It was more time for the kids who need it. So thanks for bringing this forward. And with that, House File 1390, as amended, is re-referred to Ways and Means, but it's my intention to lay it over today. And so thank you very much. Representative Kreisha is going to come up and talk on House File 1368. All right, and just a reminder, so far we're doing okay, but members, we are going to get through this entire agenda today. As you know, I like to give members a lot of latitude and discussion. I think it's been great for the committee, but I may be a little stricter on time limits today, and I would just ask if you have questions, try to keep them concise so we can get through the bills. If we have additional things we want to talk about or come back to a discussion point, we can do that if we get through everything today. So, and Representative Kreisha, are you ready to go?
I am.
Okay, so Representative Kreisha moves House File 1368 be referred to taxes, but again, my intention to lay it over today. And with that, why don't you go ahead and present your bill?
And Madam Chair, I do have an amendment.
Oh, all right. All right, so members, in your packet, there should be an A4 amendment to accompany House File 1368. Why don't you tell us about the amendment?
The A4 amendment is a bit of a technical amendment. It also addresses some...
Oh, don't. Okay, hold on. Can I have the pages check? I don't think the members have this amendment. So why don't you talk about it, and sure, we won't vote on it or anything until after everyone has it.
I can do that. And I'm sorry for the oversight, members.
Okay.
So
I think
the member is that...
Not everybody's got it.
So the amendment that you don't have gives free ice cream, but the amendment that you're about to get
All right, so everybody has the amendment now? Yes? We have the amendment for everyone? Okay. All right. I think everybody's got the amendment now.
And so when we first started drafting the bill, Mr. Strom and Ms. Manns identified a couple technical things that we needed to clean up. And so that has been done here. Some of that is around some of the fees that would have to be to administer this program. I believe the general general standard is about 15%. I actually asked the fees be at 5% for administration because I want the dollars to flow to the preschool scholarship. And there's also a couple of items here that were raised actually by Representative Dabney. Thank you for that. In the last committee, one of those which is clarifying the discrimination language, and another one is inserting quality rating and improvement system as well to make sure that we are catching that as well. If you have any more questions on the technical side, I would refer to Ms. Manns or Mr. Strom, who helped me with that.
All right. So with that, why don't we go ahead and get the bill in the shape that the author would like it. So with that, any other questions on the A4 amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. All right. So now the amendment has been added to your bill. And if you want to go ahead and just kind of start with the overall presentation on your intent here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this is something completely different than what I've done all year. This is scholarships for preschool and the disadvantaged kids. Boy, that went over well. So with that, this really is about getting to the heart of where preschool scholarships have started. And they started in the philanthropy arena. And so this is about allowing people to take their dollars, incent their behavior to donate to a qualified foundation, which would in turn give those dollars out in the terms of scholarship to our most needy and disadvantaged children for preschool. What I like about this bill is it's an attempt to help what we've been trying to do with preschool learning for disadvantage. It takes it out of the arena a bit of the state government in that we're allowing people to take their own dollars. Rather than maybe putting your dollars to a PCR program where you get a one-to-one match up to $50 or $100 for a couple, you now could put this to a scholarship program. So we know that people will do charitable acts with their dollars, and we're asking them to consider this as one of those, which is why I've selected the credit route rather than the tax deduction. I really want to incent people to do this. It's about a $20 million ask, and I learned a long time ago that the worst that people can say is no. So I'm here asking us to consider allowing other people to help our schools, to help our kids, and to do that through their charitable donations.
All right. Thank you, Representative Krisha. Did you have any testifiers here today?
I don't believe I do. Most of my testifiers, they come at varying. I mean, we've heard enough of what I do in this arena, so I think I'm okay.
All right. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, thanks for all of your work on early childhood. We've been doing a lot, and hopefully we'll come through with a lot that's very effective. But my question on this is, and trying to get through it really quick,
mm-hmm.
I can't find the answer. What would prevent this from somebody setting up something in Sunfish Lake, and it can only go to Sunfish Lake kids? Or how do we, in other words, if you set this up, is there a way that you have it so that it can be that it has to be distributed statewide, and not that a few people can put it together and then have it go for a certain group of kids that we really probably don't need to spend a lot of other people's tax money on?
Representative Krisha.
And thank you. The simple answer is, if the folks at Sunfish Lake want to put their money together and put it into a scholarship foundation, nothing prevents them from doing that. And on the output side of that, it would go to disadvantaged children. It would go to them based on poverty and some other criteria. So it's really going to them. So it's not like it's going to – the people that are donating this are probably not going to be donating it for their own kids. Yeah, the expectation is you're donating this, and this is going to disadvantaged based on poverty children. Now, this came up in Ed Innovation, and I'll answer it straight up here. There's nothing in here that says it has to be statewide or it has to be proportional, because that's what the foundation's jobs are, is to find how to get these out. And I don't think it would be in the best interest to put restriction that, saying that you have to do this statewide, because let's say that a number of businesses in Minneapolis get together and decide we're going to find the disadvantaged kids in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I think that's great. If somebody wants to do that up in Bemidji, wonderful. That's the beauty of this program, is it's tax dollars going in with no caps, which is what we have on the legislative side of the preschool scholarships. So this is really taking some of those restrictions away.
Representative Mallory. Other questions? Anyone else? Anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none, Representative Crescia, final words.
It's a good bill.
Very succinct. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, members.
All right. So with that, Representative Crescia renews his motion that House File 1368 be re-referred to taxes, but with the chair's intent of laying it over for today. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Schumacher here. Representative Schumacher? So now, next we'll hear from Representative Schumacher on House File 768.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
My apologies. Can we just roll back for 30 seconds?
Sure.
With the Representative Crescia's bill.
Yes.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking the chair. Again, what account carries that cost? Is that going to be carried within this committee's target? Tax committee's target. I'm sorry, I should have asked that before we moved on.
Yeah, that's a good question. It is my belief, and Representative Crescia, if there's any other understanding that you have, but that if that comes into fruition, that would come from the tax committee's target.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative Schumacher. Let me get your bill before us formally. I would move that House File 768 be re-referred to Ways and Means, but with the chair's intent to lay it over today. And so with that, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 768 would allow for my school district of Hendricks to enter into its own reciprocity agreements with the state of South Dakota, the schools in South Dakota. Right now they're under the general reciprocity agreement. And the reason that they're asking for this is because several years ago they did have this agreement, their ability to do their own agreement with South Dakota when they were a joint school with the neighboring city of Ivanhoe. But through the last few years, that contract has been separated between Hendricks and Ivanhoe, and one of the unintended consequences of that the severing of that contract between those two schools is that this reciprocity agreement understanding was also dissolved there. And so they're just asking for the ability to do that again. And with me today I have Nick Sitterman, who is a member of the school board in the Hendricks School District. And I should mention that the Hendricks School District is where your very own Representative Crescia got a lot of his teeth cut in the educating world. So he can tell you more about that later.
You bought my book.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Schumacher. Welcome, Mr. Sitterman. If you please just state your name for the record, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name's Nick Sitterman. Been on the school board in Hendricks, was elected, I believe, in 1995. I didn't think it would be something that I'd be keeping track of the years, but has added up. And during that time, we had to work agreements with school districts across the border in South Dakota. The funding between the two states is completely different, and so we would literally sit down at the table and talk about dollar for dollar. How we came up with those dollars was our responsibility. And when they put the reciprocity, I understand there were reasons that they had to deal with that. That took some of our dollars off the table that we no longer had access to. So this is just to reinstate to what we previously did before the reciprocity was worked out between the two. And feel free to ask any questions. I'll throw the disclaimer. I am not a school financial expert, but I'll try and answer any questions you have the best of my ability.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Sitterman. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Sitterman, I don't understand what you meant. We lost out on dollars.
Okay.
Mr. Sitterman, go ahead.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, there are local dollars that we can't access, as well as state dollars, compensatory dollars, those kinds of things that if the dollar amount per se worked out between St. Paul and Pierre was $5,000, that student with the different funding sources was maybe worth, let's say, $6,300 for the Minnesota student. I don't know if there's any, but so that's where the discrepancy comes in. Because of the state funding differences between Minnesota and South Dakota, they may come up with the end dollar the same, but how they do it is different.
Yeah, and Mr. Strong, do you have any, do you want to kind of walk us through this a little bit?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm not an expert on the Hendricks situation, but let me speak for a moment about the reciprocity agreement. Prior to the statewide reciprocity agreement signed by the two states, individual districts could enter into agreements to send children to each other's school and negotiate the tuition that they wanted to pay for those kids. And I believe in most cases, and again, the folks from Hendricks can correct me if I'm wrong here, in most cases, if that child counts as a Minnesota student under our funding formulas, that student will generate more money than the South Dakota student under the South Dakota funding formula. So the Minnesota school district in this circumstance would receive greater money if that student were counted in Hendricks as a student in Hendricks, and then if Hendricks could contract with the neighboring district to provide the educational service, because the South Dakota rate is lower, they could arrange a tuition agreement where not the full amount of that money perhaps would be going to South Dakota. There's a number of adjustments going on, but essentially the way it works in its overall picture is that the students in Hendricks, regardless where they're from, are being funded as if they're Minnesota students. The students in South Dakota are being funded as if they're South Dakota students. And then the state makes a net payment at the end to determine which state, and currently more Minnesota students attend in South Dakota than vice versa. So Minnesota pays the difference to South Dakota is how I understand that. But in Hendricks' situation, their issue is complicated because prior to, not only did they have a tuition agreement prior, but they had an arrangement with the Ivanhoe School District. And so there was a different situation for them when they were a part of offering their program as a part of a shared program with Ivanhoe. There's a couple of factors going on. But I think, and again, I don't want to speak on Hendricks' behalf, but I think it would be in their financial interest, and there is a fiscal note in your packet that tries to get at this as well from MMB, but I think it's in Hendricks' financial interest to have their children all counted as Minnesota children and then to work separately to get an agreement with South Dakota for the students that are actually served there and vice versa for the kids who come across the border.
Help, Representative Murphy. I'm struggling to follow this just a little myself. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. And then, Mr. Strom, then would they wouldn't sign an agreement with South Dakota if they weren't getting enough money to educate that South Dakota student, would they?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think the issue is the cost structure in the two districts may be somewhat different. The expected revenue for another student, whether through open enrollment or elsewise, may be different as well. So it may still be in the school's interest to have an agreement, even if a different level of funding were negotiated between the two districts. But right now, because of the uniform reciprocity agreement, Hendricks isn't allowed to negotiate a separate amount with the district.
They're required by the state statute to pay the amount that the state reciprocity agreement requires them to pay.
Oh.
Representative Crescia.
And thank you. And Madam Chair, just from living out there, one of the issues that I believe you're raising is the proximity to schools. That, I mean, you're only a couple miles from the South Dakota border, and so it's about getting kids to the closest school who may be in different school districts which are across different states. And you're trying to reconcile that, and you're asking us to give you the permission to do so. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. And it sounds like, just to follow on with that, that the reciprocity agreement is not necessarily working in your favor.
Correct, Madam Chair.
All right.
If I can try and shed some light on this, my understanding is it would be the dollar amount would be for Minnesota students, not so Minnesota, we would not receive the state formula in that for South Dakota students attending Minnesota. It's only the Minnesota students, and then if those students were to basically open enroll or go under our agreement with South Dakota school, if there's a difference in that dollar amount, those dollars would remain in Hendricks to be used for funding programs.
Okay. I think I got it. Representative Wills?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious how South Dakota feels about this. It sounds like you've had an agreement with them in the past, and it's worked well. And so if we pass this bill into law, you'd go back to that same agreement you had before, and South Dakota would be happy as well? Is how I'm understanding it?
Mr. Sitterman.
Madam Chair, it did. We try and squeeze a dollar out of a quarter, so we didn't send a whole lot of money for them. I'm not schooled in South Dakota funding, but my understanding is they probably look at it more as program-wise versus student-wise. And how they generate their dollars, they got state dollars, but they generate a lot of school dollars locally, so they do it completely different. We ran it very similar to as if students open enrolled within Minnesota school districts, and actually we shaved a little more off of there, so we probably retained 22% of the dollars we received to help offset that. And it is. Hendricks, the city limits, I believe, is about a quarter mile from the South Dakota border. But it being on the lake with the expansion of lake homes, it's all part of it now. So you run from Hendricks Main Street past houses down into South Dakota homes. So we're close. Like I use the story, I'm a hack golfer who plays a slice, and when I hit it straight, I'm in South Dakota. So that's how close we are.
Very good. Very good. Other questions? Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just reading the assumptions in the fiscal note. They're about as clear as mud. But this is rather interesting, to say the least, because the payment by the state of Minnesota to the state of South Dakota would be decreased by 34 times the average state aid paid by South Dakota. Correspondingly, the aid paid by the state of Minnesota to your school district would be increased because the adjusted average daily membership used to calculate your state aid would be increased by 34. Since state aid per student is higher in Minnesota than in South Dakota, the increase in payments to Hendricks would exceed the reduction in payments to South Dakota. Because of this, the bill creates this cost for us. So this is It's not complicated, I guess, but it's really, I don't know how it, how we resolve this when I know what you're saying. These children come to your school because of what you offer. And we had that issue earlier with those pre-kindergarten children from another district on the border. So I don't know if we can make this any simpler or any more equal. But anyway, it's going to cost the state of Minnesota, as it says in the fiscal note. And that's the way it is. But and then the next statement is the payment per student made to South Dakota will remain constant. That's really nice for them.
Yep, I think that's. I think you've capitalized it, Representative Erickson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll ask the simple question, Mr. Sunderman. How many kids are we talking about on average year to year between your school and South Dakota?
Mr. Sunderman.
Madam Chair, I don't have the exact number. We're probably, if I apologize for that, I would guess that there's probably 50 students going from Minnesota to South Dakota, and I would say 23 from South Dakota to Minnesota currently. Years past, it was the other way around. We had more students from South Dakota attending the Hendricks School than what was going to the three neighboring school districts that we all had tuition agreements. Some of the tuition agreements, when we had one student, we got one for $2,200 for one student. So it was a good deal for us.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson, anything else? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and I apologize if you said this. I should have paid closer attention, but I'm just curious on the ground. So what kind of students are we talking about? Are we talking about elementary, high school, and what changed, if anything, in South Dakota so that we've got it? Are they offering new courses or new opportunities, or what's your best kind of sharing in terms of what's driving the changes in enrollment practices?
Mr. Sitterman.
Madam Chair, probably the biggest change is we lost a principal to them, so that took students. Unfortunately, very good principal, and for dollar reasons, they went there. But we do offer. We're expanding our curriculum. We're focusing more on the trades curriculum, and hopefully, we can draw some of those students back.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Just to make it a little clearer.
Thank you. It's not going to. I was just wondering, those tuition agreements, do they include transportation or not?
Mr. Sitterman.
Madam Chair, they did not.
Thank you.
We picked up students.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions from members? And is there anyone else from the audience who wishes to testify on House File 768? All right. With that, Representative Schumacher, any final comments?
Nope.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you. Mr. Sitterman, we appreciate you coming today to help enlighten us on this. And I think we've got a little better understanding of what's happening in your district. But thanks for making the trip today. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 768 be re-referred to Ways and Means with the intention of laying it over today. And thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Bernardi. We will now hear from Representative Bernardi on House File 724.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome, Representative Bernardi. And if you want, I'll go ahead and move your bill to get it before us. So I would move that House Bill 724 be re-referred to Ways and Means, but it is my intention to lay it over today for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And if you would go ahead and present your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I did find that testimony interesting because that's a conversation my father-in-law and I have had together because they're from that area. So I was trying to figure it out myself with him, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. So now we'll have something to talk about when I call him today. I try to call him every day, so that was interesting. So anyway, with us today, today we're going to be talking about concurrent enrollment, and it's focusing on financing the cost to pay for students for concurrent enrollment, which is $150, and right now school districts are, I'm hearing, anywhere from $20-some dollars to about $38, and so it's creating a cross-subsidy. And then there's also the need for teacher training, and that's one of the bright spots of this program also is the teacher enhancement to their teaching. With us today, I'm going to just introduce them first, and I'm going to give you a little preview of concurrent enrollment to get our heads around this, because you hear, like, college in the school, you hear concurrent enrollment, you hear AP, you hear all these different things and what they are, and I'll just briefly go through that. But with us today, we have from Hopkins School District, Dr. Diane Schimmel-Fennig. Yeah, thank you. And she is a director of teaching and learning. We also have Tim Amley, and he is the coordinator of career and technical education. And then from one of my school districts in my area is Jeffrey McGonigal. Yeah, I say a little bit slow, but associate student superintendent of high schools. The presentation that I have put together for you today is from Moundsview School Districts. They have really embraced this concept of concurrent enrollment, and actually students can get their AA degree upon graduating from high school. So anyway, this is, see if I can handle this technology. Okay, I think I am. What they wanted me to let you know is it's an and by the way, Dr. Hooverman actually had surgery, so he wasn't able to be there, and it is their spring break, so the presenters were off this week. An opportunity for all students to begin accessing college-level coursework while still at the high school. It's a partnership with higher education to lessen the divide between K-12 and post-secondary education. Personalized learning. It's a clear pathway allowing for completion of a Minnesota transfer curriculum and an AA degree, which is huge, and an opportunity for both our high school achieving students and students in the academic middle. And that's what's so great about concurrent enrollment. It doesn't just target the top 25% or half, you know, depending what grade you're in. It focuses on anywhere from like 35 to 75th percentile. So it really targets a large number of students who otherwise wouldn't have this opportunity for this kind of rigor in their curriculum. And as you probably have heard before, that concurrent enrollment, when students have in high school, they take college class, they actually have a better chance of graduating from college. So this is a good thing all the way around. Now, this is the one thing I wanted to share with you, especially in this presentation. Anoka-Ramsey Community College is a place where the students, through the college in the school type opportunities that happens, there's advanced placement opportunities, there's college in the school, that's with the University of Minnesota, there's also college level examination program, post-secondary enrollment options, and then also career and technical education articulated credit courses. So all of them are wonderful opportunities for students. One of the things I just want to share with you, and I'll go through these quickly, but the junior class, the class of 2015, started out as juniors, and when Irondale went all out in this opportunity for kids to get their 2 years degree and that sort of thing, college credits earned have jumped to 5,100 credits. It's just amazing. And these show you how many from less than a semester worth of credits all the way up to 4+ semesters worth of credits. It shows you the number of students that are doing this. I keep saying this is amazing, but it still is amazing that these kids have this opportunity in high school. This shows that we oftentimes talk about closing the achievement gap, and so I want to just give you some information about white and non-white students, the class of 2012 and 2015. And I'm going to just do a series of here to show you the people that are participating, that are earning credit while in high school. You'll see the large number of non-white students who are actually just really excelling in this program, and 60% of them are taking college credit in high school. And then we also talk about the free and reduced lunch, who qualify for a free and reduced lunch at Irondale High School. You'll see it's about 40% for that class of 2015. And you'll see that 55% of the free and reduced lunch students are participating in this program. And then this just shows you the actually millions of dollars that are being saved by students and by taking college courses before they get into college. And the key messages they wanted me to leave with you is that more students in Irondale are participating in concurrent enrollment. They're earning college credit. There's a large number of free and reduced lunch and non-white students that are earning college credit. Families are saving money, and the rigor is amazing. Expectations, opportunities, and aspirations for all students. And this is a young man. He testified in policy committee, and some of you probably were there. He actually brought tears to my eyes. He is an amazing young man. You can read it here, but the bottom line is he's an awesome student. He has a large number of credits that he'll be entering Bethel College with, and he got himself a nice scholarship. And that's a nice thing for students to be able to demonstrate their ability to colleges before they ever get there and have, you know, this is anecdotally, I would guess that they would have more opportunities for scholarships. I wanted to bring real-life people here today to share their experience of the importance of concurrent enrollment and actually funding it, because what ends up happening is that it ends up being a cross-subsidy, and it comes from other areas in school districts when they're putting their budgets together. Would you like to start? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeff McGonigal, Associate Superintendent for Anoka-Hennepin Schools, and that slide presentation you just saw is very similar to the work that we're undertaking. We're starting at Anoka High School with a program called Bridge to College, but we plan to expand to all five of our traditional high schools. And so I was looking at it, just inserting my numbers into the same slides that would represent Anoka-Hennepin. When the World's Best Workforce was signed into law, we were very pleased. It aligned closely with the work that we were doing. And we were actually working with one more institution for one of our options, and that's St. Cloud State University, as we build our concurrent enrollment courses for our students. But it is a fact that as we achieve those goals in that world's best workforce, the number of students that we're serving grows, but the cross subsidy does as well. And I think if my CFO told me correctly, fully funding that formula would be about $200,000 right now for Anoka-Hennepin. It'll grow in the future, but $200,000 is equal to 2.5 full-time equivalent teachers that we would still like to have in our classrooms for all our students. So we're really excited about the legislation. We feel like we're honoring it and moving it in the right direction, but being mindful of the costs that are associated with it is very helpful, and I appreciate that the committee is entertaining the potential of improving that situation and lowering the cross subsidy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Diane Schimmelfenning. I'm the Director of Teaching and Learning for the Hopkins Public Schools. And I will just add to what's already been presented in terms of the importance for preparing all of our students for college and career. One of the opportunities we're able to provide now in the Hopkins Public Schools, thanks in part to Representative Seltzer's service on the Hopkins School Board, we have financial literacy as a high school graduation requirement for all Hopkins students. And the young man sitting next to me, Tim Amley, worked with North Hennepin Community College, and now all of our students who complete that course successfully will graduate with 3 MinSCU credits. So that's open to all students, because it's a requirement for all students regardless of their passion or their pathway. So I'm particularly appreciative of the professional development support included in this bill, because the best investment in our students is investment in our teachers, and they deliver the quality programs that we all deserve. And so Tim Amley, as he mentioned, is our career and technical education coordinator, and thanks to him, a lot of this concurrent enrollment is occurring in our district.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the rest of the committee. A couple things I'll add to this. Hopkins is we do many of the things that were in the slide presentation from Irondale as well. But as far as concurrent enrollment with the addition of current technical education classes that are eligible recently, one of the big things for us was transparency and availability for all students. So it's not just a class here or there having the all students taking this as a credit. They can experience a college-level class and be able to take those credits forward wherever they may go because it's a minuscule transcripted credit. The other big thing as we move forward with concurrent enrollment is currently there's a lot of differences within the system on how they accept that. And finally, the writing on the wall is there's a lot of communication about it and looking at making this so that schools can get in and it can be maintained, where before we didn't know if it could be maintained. So that's why we recently jumped into working with our students, and they're excited about it. I don't teach the classes per se. I teach in a different area in the school with technology education. The kids that I have that come through and talk about it, and they're just saying, hey, I'm getting college credit, and I'm being successful in a college class, and we know that it'll take them to many more places because they're experiencing it already at the high school level.
Thank you, Mr. Umley. Did you have any additional testifiers, Representative Bernardi?
No, that's it.
All right. Questions from committee members? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bernardi, for bringing this forward. And I was just curious, you know, as we've expanded on choice, we've seen the number of students that participate in these types of programs increase. But I was just curious if you had any breakdown of it to see any trends. If students were choosing college in the schools, for example, in lieu of going to PSEO or taking AP classes, if you have any of that data.
Mr. McConnell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson. We do have the numbers, but I didn't bring them with me. But I can tell you it's our sense that the more that we offer the concurrent enrollment classes in our school, the more students are choosing them. And we're pleased to be able to do that. We have a really nice partnership with Anoka Ramsey Community College and St. Cloud State University that's developed through this work. And there's no competition in this. We're helping them. They're helping us. Our ultimate outcome, I'm sure it's true in all our districts, are to have students really in a good position to be successful their freshman year in college. And anything that furthers that goal is something that we're all working together on.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, it's kind of become our tradition. I just wanted to thank and welcome Diane and Tim from the Hopkins School District. We're very fortunate to have them, and I'm very proud to have them here testifying on behalf of our strong concurrent enrollment program. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. We're glad to have you all here, and I had the pleasure of visiting Hopkins to see a little presentation on financial literacy, and it's a terrific program that you do. I'm a big, big fan of that, so thanks for that. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Bernardi, for having this bill. And I support College in the Schools and PSEO and other options to give students the opportunity to have dual enrollment and be more prepared for college. So I appreciate what you're trying to do here. And I was just looking at the bill and noticed that we don't have the actual dollar amounts yet. And I don't know if you've had a chance to get a fiscal note back, or maybe Mr. Strom could help us with that. I'm just curious how much it would cost to be able to fully fund this program.
Thank you, and I think we will have Ms. Johnson put some numbers to
the board. Excuse me. Madam Chair, Representative Wills, we do have a fiscal note in process, but it's not completed yet. So I will circulate that to the committee when it's done.
And just could you tell us what we're currently spending on concurrent enrollment?
$2 million. There's a fixed appropriation.
Yeah, the amount is capped currently at $2 million, and we are hearing that it's not adequate.
Madam Chair, if I could just add real quick, about $10 million is unfunded at this time, so that the districts cover that portion.
Other questions? None. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? Excuse me, on House File 724. All right, seeing none, Representative Bernardi, do you want to offer any closing comments?
Well, just thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. It's
it's an honor to be working on a bill that has a lot of bipartisan support, and I appreciate that. And I'm actually surprised Representative Wills and I oftentimes have the same bills going forward, and I'm actually thinking I'd love for you to join this bill as well. Sometimes we come up and co-testify together on bills. So anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you to your testifiers. We appreciate all your good work and for being here today. And so with that, I renew my motion. Oh, did somebody else have a question? Nope. With that, I would renew my motion that House File 724 be re-referred to Ways and Means, but it's my intention to lay it over today. And thank you all for being here. Thank you, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you very much.
All right, Representative Newton. I'm very proud of our committee today. We are doing very well on time. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I learned a long time ago that the length of the agenda is inverse the amount of time it takes to get through it. It seems like when you have one or two items, it takes forever.
There's something about that, Representative Newton. So with that, Representative Newton moves House File 1571 to be re-referred to Ways and Means, but with my intention to lay it over for today for possible inclusion. With that, thank you, and please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. One of the things that slows down the number of students taking PSEO classes is that it costs the high school money to have a student take PSEO class, and it also costs the community colleges or the colleges that the students go to, because those facilities have to pay for books and lab materials. So my bill proposes to do two things. One is to reimburse both the losing high school, and then to reimburse the community college or the secondary education facility. So what it does is it increases the funding for post-secondary institutions by 12%, and it allows 12% of the funding to be used for textbooks and equipment purchases. That could come to potentially about $780 a year, which is right now the way things are going, about two textbooks. And the second change is it increases the amount of revenue that the school district is permitted to keep. Under current law, a full-time PSEO student, the district keeps the compensatory revenue and 12% of the student-based revenue, and this would raise it from the 12% to 35%. So that would be an increase for the school district of about $1,000, $1,060. So with that, Madam Chair, I have, again, Jeff McGonigal, who is with the Anoka Hennepin School District, and Mr. Don Lewis, who's with Anoka Ramsey. He's the CFO of Anoka Ramsey Community College, and they would like to testify.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. My name is Don Lewis. I serve as the Vice President for Administration and Chief Financial Officer at Anoka Ramsey Community College and at Anoka Technical College as well. Thank you for this opportunity to be here with you. Thank you, committee members. Anoka Ramsey Community College is very, very proud of its relationship it has with Minnesota high schools in providing PSEO classes on its campuses. We have two campuses, one in Coon Rapids, one in Cambridge, Minnesota. Of that, we serve 821 PSEO students from 59 different high schools. We also served 136 homeschool students who were attending PSEO classes. This represented about 8% of our student bodies. These PSEO students completed in 2014 20,118 college level credits. We are also very proud of the relationship that we have with Anoka Hennepin School District. One of the things that we like to brag about, which was brought up a little bit in the concurrent enrollment, is that Anoka Ramsey Community College and Anoka Hennepin School District save students over $500,000 in tuition payments, or maybe I better say, save their parents over $500,000 in tuition payments by taking PSEO courses through Anoka Ramsey Community College. So it's a very, very important program to us. And although the academic model for PSEO provides outstanding benefits, the financial model is a little bit flawed. At Anoka Ramsey Community College, PSEO students can enroll both in traditional online classes and in traditional seated classes. In 2014, these 20,000 some credits that they took contributed $3,498,000 of tuition expenses to the college. Okay. That's on average $173.73 per credit. When we look at how much PSEO was reimbursed for these, in 2014 it was $186.36 per credit. So if we do some of that math, we discovered that we had a residual amount of $12.63 available per credit to purchase textbooks and related course equipment that was associated with that course. $12.63 doesn't go very far, unfortunately. On average now, in 2014, a PSEO textbook and or course equipment cost a little over $36 a credit. So that shortfall of about $25 was made up by and subsidized by the college. $25 might not seem like a great deal of money, but when we multiply it out by the number of credits, that cost the Noka Ramsey Community College almost $489,000 worth of funds that had to be covered, all of it going for textbooks and or course supplies. We're very, very supportive of the bill that is before you. We think that increasing the amount of revenues for PSEO classes not only will help stabilize a little bit of a broken financial model, it'll also enhance the academic model of PSEO. It'll allow many additional courses to be offered to PSEO students, which normally were precluded from them as a result of higher fees and higher textbooks. For example, it would open the door for the introduction to anatomy class, which has a textbook cost of $259. It would open the door to introduction to statistics, which is easier said than done for me, which has textbook costs of about $180. And a very popular course in the art department, ceramics, would be opened on up, which has $125 to $175 worth of equipment costs associated. So I invite you to consider this seriously, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. We appreciate your testimony. Welcome back, Mr. McGonigal.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would only add that we want our students to have these PSEO opportunities, and we support funding them as well as we can for Noka Ramsey and the other post-secondary institutions in the state. Anoka Hennepin students want those opportunities. And the other thing I'd add is while these students' classes are at the Anoka Ramsey Community College for this example, or could be at St. Cloud State, or could be North Hennepin, et cetera, they are still our students, and we still take care of them. They are still our guidance counselors work with them, and in fact, the amount of time guidance counselors spend with these students is significantly more because there's a lot of coordination that goes on with transcripts and credits, et cetera. They're still members of our drama productions. They're still members of our teams. So the costs for the school district remain outside of their attending class if they're full-time at one of the post-secondary institutions like Anoka Ramsey. So those costs are still real, and I believe this bill would move us in the direction of funding them, and again, not taking money away from our general fund disproportionately. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have any further testifiers, Representative Newton?
No, Madam Chair, I'm open for questions.
All right, and I'll just throw out to the audience if anyone here would like to testify on House File 1571. All right, seeing none. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Similar question that I had for Representative Bernardi. It's not clear what the cost would be, and I certainly support PSEO, but do we have a fiscal note on this yet, or how much it would cost?
Madam Chair and Representative Wills, a fiscal note has been requested. It hasn't been received. Perhaps Mr. Strom can help somewhat. My guess is it's going to be somewhere within a range of $10,000 to $16,000. Is that fair, Mr. Strom?
Madam Mr. Chair, Strom. Representative Newton, million, I think.
Million.
Yeah.
Nice try.
You were doing so well, Representative.
I was hoping to get that from Minneapolis.
Representative Wells, do you have additional questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, just on this and the last bill, I'm looking forward to finding out how much it costs, and I'm hoping that we can fit it into our target. I think PSEO and College in the Schools are excellent programs and help prepare students to be able to transition into the college experience a little bit more prepared and hopefully avoid remedial courses. So thank you, Representative Newton, for bringing this.
Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, it was the timing is wrong now. I was going to ask if he was from the Iron Range. But
it's just a few zeros, right? Okay. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, Representative Newton, do you want to make a final comment on your bill?
Only to re-refer the bill to Ways and Means with the layover in the committee, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Right. And Representative Newton renews his motion. And with that, thank you all for your testimony. And thank you, Representative Newton. I would agree with Representative Wells. These are very worthy ideas today, and I do hope we'll have a good target to work with. Oh, my goodness, we have actually gotten through all of them. A banner day, members. Banner day. Any other comments for the good of the order since we've got 15 minutes? Otherwise, you all have 15 minutes of time to do whatever you wish with. Maybe eat today. That was a good idea. What a thought. Exactly.
There you go.
All right. With that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.